Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. My name's Mike. Dude, after all of this losing, I just want to know first, right off the top of the show, how close were you to the edge?
Tiptoes over the sill.
Yeah.
Teetering, ankles up, dude.
Yeah, I was full on, bought the women's underwear, booked a plane ticket to Thailand. I was going full on David Carradine.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Dude.
I know.
True confessions here at the top of the podcast.
I know.
That's pretty crazy.
I know. It was bad, man. It was getting to the point where I almost didn't want to watch the games. And I think to myself, I have season tickets. We do the podcast. I almost don't want to watch these games because I know the Sharks are going to lose. I don't want to put myself through the torture.
It got so bad for me that I almost didn't show up to my 2.5 men taping. It just got that bad.
Yeah.
I just had to go on the Vegas bender.
Nice, dude.
Wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of benders, the Sharks are on a 2-game win streak.
Woo!
I think we probably expected to come in here on a downer, but I'm on a high.
Yeah, everybody's
I'm on a
high,
and we've got a ton to talk about. We've got so many emails.
Yes.
We have a resolution to our iTunes review contest.
Yes, we do.
A few excellent entries. Dude, we've got two new players.
We got two new players.
Which is always great podcast fodder.
Of course. What else can we talk about but new players? I mean, we talk about potentially getting new players every single week on the podcast. This week, we actually get two new players. And those two new players are the answer to our prayers, clearly.
Here we go.
All right.
Ready to announce it, dude?
Yeah, ready. Ben Eager and Kyle Wellwood.
Yeah!
Woo!
That's the ticket. We're going all the way.
Going all the way.
Vancouver, someone was just shaking in their boots. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. That was Kyle Wellwood walking down the street.
I must cut now to Jim from Section 202 because he sent in an email. He said, I guess we could start planning the parade route now for Doug Wilson to grease the skids to the cup with the acquisitions of Ben, I'm not a defenseman Eager, and Tubby Wellwood. Sure, these guys didn't really cost the team anything, but their salaries that are eating up the cap and they don't address the most pressing need on the team. Unless this is a precursor to another deal, I find this to be very disappointing.
Now, dude.
Yes.
First of all, before we get into the analysis of these two players, let's just get some of the Kyle Wellwood jokes out of the way.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, Jim's got the first one.
Okay.
With Kyle Wellwood in town, does this mean that Henry's High Life will run out of prime rib even sooner than 6 p.m.? It's a good way to start.
In his defense, Kyle Wellwood did ask his nutritionist if Charleston Chew was a food group.
He's trying to learn.
But I did think he was really good in The Nutty Professor.
we're on a roll here, dude.
I saw when he was interviewed about his weight in Vancouver, he responded by saying he just wanted to be like Val Kilmer. Get in my belly.
Get in there.
Dude, now apparently his weight issues are over. If you don't know about the Kyle Wellwood drama,
yeah,
it's that he was a highly thought of fifth round pick,
mm-hmm.
but had a great career in the Ontario Hockey League as a junior player. He, you know, had over 100 points one year. He actually centered a line with Chichu. He was traded for, do you know, in the OHL? It's a big trade.
Kyle Wellwood
was traded for Jason Spezza.
Okay.
Okay, which was a big trade in the junior ranks. He won the OHL Sportsman of the Year for acquiring zero penalty minutes, so we know there's going to be a lot of physical play. Here, 338 NHL games in six seasons, 63 goals, 97 assists, actually much better stats than I thought they were going to be. He started the year in the KHL. He got cut by Phoenix in camp. Kyle Wellwood, dude.
Yeah.
What's the impact here?
Marginal. It's, to me, it seems like it's a no, it's a very low risk, some reward type of signing. The Blues, it was the Blues that signed him to the contract, right? And then the Sharks just claimed him off of waivers.
Now, explain how this process works to some of the listeners who might not understand.
So, because the KHL technically under the CBA counts as a minor league, that the fact that Kyle Wildwood left the KHL means he has to clear waivers to come to the NHL, which is actually the exact same condition that Yevgeny Nabokov finds himself in as well. So Kyle Wildwood was signed to a player contract by the St. Louis Blues. Of course, he had to clear waivers to report to the Blues, so he was put on waivers, and every other NHL team had the option of claiming him for Kyle Wildwood's entire contract amount. The Sharks decide to do that. According to CapGeek, it's $650,000. So the Sharks are on the hook for $650,000. If he doesn't work out, they can waive him. And they can...
But if no one claims him, this is where the confusion comes in.
Right.
He cannot play in the AHL this year.
Right.
According to several reports that we've read. So if Wildwood gets waived and no one picks him up, what happens, dude?
So, dude, I'm already ahead of you.
Okay.
I went on the HF Board's Business of Hockey Forum.
Fantastic
which
forum.
Which is my favorite for CBA stuff, because there's some guys on there that are even sicker than me, and I reached a new level of sickness today, which I'll tell you about in a minute.
Okay.
So I posted this question because...
Sicker than the Carradine trip you were planning?
On par, let's say. according to Jim Rutherford, who was a writer for the St. Louis Dispatch, that... He said just what you said. He's not eligible to play in Peoria this season because the Blues missed the December 15 deadline that would have allowed him to be paid on a two-way contract. So I asked a question about this. I looked in the CBA, couldn't find anything about it. So a guy responded and says, as Wildwood played in Europe but signed a deal after 15 December, he can be assigned to the NHL for cap relief purposes, but he cannot dress for an AHL game.
So he can be assigned to Worcester, but mm-hmm. he can't play.
That's correct.
And he would then be paid the AHL equivalent of his salary, and his salary would be off the books. Is that right?
Well, I'm not the thing that's still
a two-way deal. From what
I'm not
I read.
Sure he can get paid two-way money. He might still get paid the $650,000,
but it won't count against the cap.
It won't count against the cap. And this guy says that it's an AHL PHPA issue, which is PHPA is Professional Hockey Players of America. This is my new sickness.
Okay.
You can get the AHL PHPA collective bargaining agreement as well. It cost $10 and I paid for it.
Oh. Dude. And then you read it?
I haven't got it yet, which I was hoping to read before this podcast. So I could even quote the language after paying $10 for, yeah, I know it's bad.
But I guess people have purchased worse and more embarrassing things on the
right,
internet.
Right. And it is only $10. So, I have that much in bad iTunes apps.
Let's move to Ben Eager.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about these sort of cumulative impact of these two guys. Ben Eager acquired today from the Atlanta Thrashers for a fifth-round pick. He's a fourth liner.
Mm-hmm. Physical guy, a lot of penalty minutes.
He's a physical guy, a lot of penalty minutes. He had 120 last year. He doesn't fight actually as much as I thought he did, although he had mm-hmm. 8 fighting majors last year. I think he's only got 3 this year, and he doesn't really tangle with some of the bigger boys. You're not going to see him fight Bugard, although he might if he had to, but... Really, the biggest guy I think I saw him dance with on hockeyfights.com was Ivanins.
Radis
Ivanins.
He's
fought him a couple times. He had 21 goals in the last 3 years. He won a Stanley Cup with the Blackhawks, dude. He's fought Douglas Murray and Fraser McLaren.
That's always nice.
Your thoughts on Ben Eager?
He's a fourth-line pickup, and... I think of both of these guys in terms of who they're replacing. The Sharks sent down Brandon Mashinter. The Sharks sent down...
Andrew Desjardins.
Justin Braun. I see these guys as upgrades over those two guys. Let's be honest. Those guys were stopgap measures. They were, unfortunately, putty, filling holes in the roster due to injuries to Pavelski and now Ryan Clough and Torrey Mitchell. And the fact is, I think... management and probably the coaching staff came up with the conclusion that, listen, these guys aren't even great as a stopgap measure, and we can't really play anymore with, you know, fourth line getting 2 minutes or 3 minutes. We need somebody that we can actually expect to play a little. Ben Eager, you would think, doesn't play a lot, but you did some research. He actually does play more than we would think.
He plays 8 to 10 minutes, a fourth line guy.
That's what you want.
He draws regular shifts. And they're almost all even strengths. And I think that's what the Sharks are looking for, are guys to play, 8 to 10 minutes of even strength hockey, which is something that they really weren't able to lean on a Mashinter or Desjardins to do with any sort of regularity, dude.
Right.
So I'm looking at these two pickups in terms of sexiness. It gets a zero.
Right. Sure.
It gets a zero. It actually almost registers on the laugh factor a little bit.
Right.
And a lot of people have been bagging on these today. Bagging.
Sure.
You know, some St. Louis Blues blogs had a field day in terms of trashing the Sharks. I saw some headline that said, "Sharks stocked with mediocre forwards."
How can you trash the Sharks? The Blues are the ones that signed them to the damn contract.
I know, but now that you know that they're going after them for the big acquisitions today of Eager and Wellwood, it was their way of being bitter berry, I suppose.
I suppose.
They wanted Wellwood to improve their team, I guess. Whether he'll improve this team, I don't know, but there's three things that stand out to me in terms of why these deals were made. One, you just hit on it. The impact of the players from Worcester have been
nil.
Although I thought Mashinter was starting to play a little bit better in the last two games, still not enough.
I didn't see
not that. The impact that you're going to get from a guy like Ben Eager, who, you know, I mean, this gets, you know, said ad nauseum, but Stanley Cup experience. He played 18 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He played in every game against the Flyers.
Right.
He scored a goal in the Stanley Cup finals. You know, this guy is, he's not, to all due respect, he's not Jody Scheller.
I was just going to say,
you know,
that.
He's better than that. He's a better player. He's going to have a little bit more of an impact, even strength. So a little bit discouraging that our own young talent couldn't plug the gap, but I suppose that's not uncommon. Second, dude, the injuries are piling up.
They are. Now
Ben Ferriero out.
Ben Ferriero and Mitchell and Clough at the moment.
And don't forget, Big John McCarthy.
Yeah.
He's also out, and he's been out for quite a while.
I thought he just got activated, I think.
Well,
I think that was pretty recent news.
Maybe he did get activated, dude. I'm not sure, but he's not on the ice. He didn't play.
Right. He hasn't played yet.
No, he has not played yet, so I mean, maybe we'll see him soon. But even with Ferriero and Mitchell and Clough, those were guys who were all playing regular minutes on a pretty regular basis, dude. And the last thing, two of those guys, maybe included in that sentence, is this a you're on notice sign from Doug Wilson to some of these guys like Seto, like Mitchell?
Mm-hmm.
If Kyle Wellwood, who by all accounts in minor leagues in the OHL was a prolific offensive player.
He has really, really good hands. My amateur scouting based on not very many games of seeing Kyle Wellwood and reading about him is that great hands, good nose of the net, no discipline on the ice, not a whole lot of defense, just one of those guys that you would see him score a goal and you'd say, wow, and then you'd miss him for five games. The only time you notice him would say, isn't he supposed to be back-checking now? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So Kyle Wellwood, maybe if his NHL career is on the line, he might pick it up a little bit.
He said all the right things today in the press conference with the local media in terms of saying that he's in shape. He has a laugh about the comments about him being out of shape and hanging out at the donut wheel. Maybe we'll see him at our favorite place, the donut wheel. And
I do love the donut wheel.
And the hot wing place. Maybe we'll see him
at Smoke Eaters.
At Smoke Eaters, dude.
Yeah,
maybe we can
some
take
of them
him
wings.
There. We'll be a bad influence. So, but in terms of Mitchell and Seto, those guys, if Wellwood can even match their sort of mediocre production so far, that frees up Doug Wilson to make a move.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so.
And it makes Seto a little bit more expendable, potentially.
And from a cap standpoint, this is actually roughly a wash. I know Jim said in his email that this is eating up cap room. Well, the fact is that Brandon Mashinter is actually making more money than Kyle Wellwood is. So Brandon Mashinter, actually, if he's not in the lineup or not on the active roster and Kyle Wellwood is, that's actually saving cap space. Ben Eager is a little bit under $1 million. So he's making more money than Desjardins. But
something's going to have to give when these guys get healthy.
Right.
And this is going to free up Doug Wilson in order to make another move. Is this the end game?
This can't be.
No.
I mean, it's pretty... Well, there's lots more to talk about in that vein. So let's get off...
Okay.
Eager and Wellwood, I think we've said enough about that. It's a...
You can never say enough about Ben Eager.
That's true.
He's got that creepy, like, Spencer Pratt, like, flesh-colored beard right now.
Oh, nice.
And it's, like, really out of control. It's like the Unabomber, like, hung out with Spencer Pratt. That's what it looks like.
Wow, that's an interesting confluence there.
We'll see if it continues or if he's going to shave it for the new city.
All right, dude. I'm going to take a break from the emails. Let's talk about this Sharks turnaround. So we talked about how close we were to the edge, and now the Sharks have won two games in a row. How much do we actually think this is a real turnaround? How inspiring or heartening is this last two games? Or is this just, meh, this is two games, I don't care until you beat Vancouver?
I put a lot of stock in their win on Monday in Phoenix. Phoenix had been hot. They've been playing well. They beat Phoenix at home. That was a game, a day game, the type of game that we usually see the Sharks tank, you know, and not play well in those kind of games. And they didn't. They played really well. You know, probably one of their best games of the year, probably, in terms of a complete effort, and especially missing some key guys. You know, it's been kind of sad that the two games that Ryan Klo have missed have been the two games that they've won. And I don't know if they felt sort of the urgency to pick up their effort because he wasn't out there or what. But the Phoenix game was very encouraging to me because that's a game that I expected them to lose that game.
I think Phoenix is a giant pain in the ass. They were last year. They are this year. Dave Tippett's got them playing this clamp-down style of hockey, and they all bought into it. We talked about it last year. At the time we played them, they were only a couple points out of the lead in the Pacific Division. They were only two or three points behind Dallas at the time. They had won 6 of 8, won 4 straight at home. This wasn't a patsy team that people usually think about when we're playing Phoenix. This is a tough team to play against all the time. You take a shift off or two shifts off, you got 2 goals against at home. This is a, you know, this is a really heartening kind of, you know, indicator for me. I was really pleased to see the way that they played. They played tough. They played tenaciously all game long. They didn't seem to go into prevent defense too badly. I mean, there were some definite, you know, scary moments. Some posts were hit, and Niemi
in the last two periods was just
great.
Outstanding.
Great.
Really, really great hockey from Niemi. And I just thought a good team effort.
Yeah.
You know, that they nobody was seemed to be dogging it. And also no coincidence that, you know, Danny Heatley suddenly wakes up and the team, you know, wins two games.
Right.
You know, the guy has been everywhere the last two games, even showing up on the back check, dude. And you know, Heatley shows up, Sharks play well. Can he keep this up, dude? I don't want to put it all on Danny Heatley, but I think a lot of the onus of this slide has come on the big three, and rightly so. And now we're seeing their game pick up. Even Patrick Marleau scored in Phoenix. Joe Thornton, you know, dunked in an empty netter, and Dan Boyle has a great pass on the power play. Those guys came up huge. Sharks win.
Right. It's almost that simple, right? Those guys play very well, contribute to the scoreboard, Sharks win.
Let me say something about being on the edge, dude. I was in a really sour mood, okay, this weekend, especially after the Sharks dropped the game on Thursday night. I was pretty upset. And you were out of town, so I didn't have anybody to hold me.
Right.
That's as true. I sobbed.
That's absolutely
into
true.
My Coors Light. And my wife turned to me for consolation, and she said, "Well, what's wrong? The Sharks do this all the time." And I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, what about last year when Boyle scored on his own team? You thought they were done then, and then they made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals. Are you going to give up now?" And I paused for a moment.
And you said yes. No.
Dude, it was a moment of true reflection.
Okay.
So I celebrated by watching The Fighter. Have you seen that movie?
No, is it good?
That's inspirational, too.
Oh, very good.
You can kick the habit of crack. Dude, you can do it.
Nice.
So so now you're on the clock.
It's like that Theo Fleury book.
Going to drive all the way from New Mexico to Calgary.
In one night.
On an 8-ball.
All right.
Got to read the Theo Fleury book.
<It's> so
anyway,
good.
Stu, don't you think that that has some sort of, even though it's not quite the same thing, you know, the Sharks are down, dude. But by any stretch, are they out?
They're not out.
No.
They're not out.
And are these tweaks the end game? No. I think it's going to help, and we'll see. It can't hurt. No. That's for sure.
No. I got an email from Leonard. This is sent to, you know, add the right context. This was sent before the Sharks won two games. I don't know if Leonard has had a slight change of heart, but Leonard was not particularly happy with Doug Wilson. He talks about an honest self-evaluation of Doug Wilson. The elephant in the room is the no trade clauses that he's giving out like used pucks. We have Vallin, Joe Thornton, Marlowe, and Heatley, Boyle with such carrots. It seems to me that the GM is giving so much control to the players after they're underperforming. So actually, to be honest, I don't think Heatley has a no trade anymore.
That seems to be up for debate.
Yeah, that's
I've read conflicting reports on that.
Well, he says, what options does Doug Wilson have? He doesn't have any. Big three are not tradable, even if someone send Wilson Crosby for Vallin. Players control this team at this point, not the GM. On the bright side, no one will call us chokers this year because if we miraculously qualify for the postseason, it will be heralded as a big-time triumph, even if we bow within a week after. So, dude, do you agree with Leonard's evaluation of Doug Wilson, and do you agree with his statement about making the postseason?
Well, I think something that we talked about, I think yesterday, was Doug Wilson did an interview on Sharkbite, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
You know, we've been clamoring for a number two defenseman, right? And what did he say that people are asking for in terms of this premium player on the open market?
He says, well, he said two things. One, he said everybody in the league is looking for defensemen and centers.
Right.
And he said he's getting plenty of calls from GMs, and they all want Couture and Demers and Justin Braun.
And Charlie Coyle.
Right, and Charlie Coyle.
And what did he say about giving up those players?
He said he's not going to do it.
He said he's not going to do it.
Right.
You know? So we could certainly call his bluff and say, you know, as it gets closer, if a Chris Phillips or a Jani Pitkinen becomes available, will he drop one of those players in there? Well, certainly not Couture, but one of the other three in mm-hmm. order to get that done. Maybe not Charlie Coyle, but maybe one of the other two guys. I don't know. But I think the point is valid. You know, Doug Wilson has, in a way, made his bed with some guys who, if you're a Doug Wilson critic, you could say, well, you look at the $4.2 million he's tied up in Huskins and Vallin,
mm-hmm.
and you look at the no movement, no trade clauses he's given to three guys with questionable heart.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there's a point to be made.
There certainly is a point to be made. But on the other hand, who else out there is better or more qualified to run this team? And I mean, we can complain all we want to, but we've had it pretty good on Easy Street here the last several years of having some very good hockey in mm-hmm. our town, right?
Right. And I think of the alternative. I mean, let's say, for instance, that we
Daryl Sutter.
No, I think, okay, we let Joe Thornton go, and we didn't trade for Danny Heatley,
right.
And we let Patrick Marleau go. So, you know, this team would be where exactly?
We would have given all that money to Gaborik.
Well, see, we've talked about how free agents don't come to San Jose, so we'd be playing with Ryan Clough and Devin Setoguchi on the top line. Maybe Logan Couture would be up there, and we'd have... Or maybe Joe Pavelski centering the line with Logan Couture on the second line. And that would be the extent of our scoring. It's hard for me to believe that the Sharks would definitely be a better team without those guys. They'd have a lot of cap room. But, you know, just going out and getting premier players like Thornton is not just a question of dialing the phone and making the deal. I mean, those players are not available.
What's the last or what other team has made bigger trades than Doug Wilson?
No, nobody.
On a consistent basis.
But on the other side, what other team has made signings like Vallin and Huskins?
Oh, there are several, dude, that have made some pretty lousy signings.
Yeah.
You know?
I thought Brian Burke was supposed to be this. Well, did Brian Burke make the
No,
Jeff
he
Finger?
Didn't do the Jeff Finger
that
signing.
That was Cliff Fletcher.
There's been several. I mean, look at Glenn Sather in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, that Wayne Redden signing is horrifying.
Michael Roosevelt.
I mean, they did get rid of him. The Sheldon Surrey signing in Edmonton is embarrassing now.
Yeah.
So there's several of those around. And you know, the Vallin, I still like Vallin as a player.
Right.
He's not worth 2.5.
No.
And Huskins is, God, how is he a +5, dude? I still don't understand it, but he's like an eyesore out there sometimes.
That's true.
Really not good enough. So I don't know what to tell you.
I think we've been pretty clear on how we feel about Doug Wilson as a general manager. That's not to say there isn't points to be made on the other side, but I don't I don't think that the alternatives would be any more palatable than the current right. situation.
Our That's friend Mark Purdy made it pretty clear in his column this week that the coach, Todd McClellan, and the GM, Doug Wilson, are extremely safe in mm-hmm. their jobs. So, and right. I would certainly take his word because he's a wise man.
Right. That's right. We got a couple crazy trades, dude. Just quick shot.
Hit me. Oh, dude, music.
Oh, music. Yeah.
Come on. Crazy trade. Are you going to watch Steven Tyler on American Idol?
Absolutely not.
Come on.
No chance.
Dude.
I'm off that show.
Do you hear him on Howard?
No.
Great interview today.
Oh, I missed it.
All right.
All right. Regear for Petrecki and Seto. Do it.
Yes.
Okay, that was easy.
Yes. Would they do it? No.
No.
Not a chance, dude. That's not enough. So let me ask you, what is the realistic price that they would... Jay Feaster asks for what from us for Regear?
Petrecki said on a first, maybe? Braun or Demers and Seto in a first? I don't.
Well, you look at...
They don't want veterans, so they're not going to want a high-priced player. They're going to want to shed cap and start rebuilding.
I think they would ask for, yeah, Seto, Demers, and a first. Would you do that?
No.
For Robin Regear?
Nah, I wouldn't do it.
You put that much stock in Jason Demers?
No, it's not that I put that much stock in it. It's just I don't put that much stock in Robin Regear.
Really?
I like Robin Regear as a player. Don't get me wrong, but he's for that kind of return, you want a guy that's gonna get some points.
I don't know if he really solves the problems right. of this team. You know, he kind of fits that Douglas Murray role on the Ghost roster,
he's
better,
way better.
But you don't really need both those guys. That's sort of what got Calgary in trouble in the first place.
Yeah, I think you're
so,
right.
So yes, I'd still make that deal though. I think that's a bargain price. Although Petrecki got a good grade on Sharks page this week for his midterm report.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. I have to read that.
He got a B, actually. And
well, that's really
he's
good.
Probably the most improved player on the team. So
great
that was
news.
Encouraging. Maybe we can look at that more next week.
Great news. Great news. Let's see. So that was from Will. Patrick Diggleman writes us about Owen Nolan. Now that we've signed, this is last Friday, so obviously Patrick didn't know about the trades or the signings we made today. Any chance they add Owen Nolan?
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why is that some other team would do to us what we just did to St. Louis.
Yes, I think that's if the number one reason.
If you get Nolan in on a cap-friendly deal, I mean, even at $1 million?
Someone will take him.
Someone's going to take him.
Absolutely.
You're not going to get him slip through, dude.
Let's see. We got an email from Eric, who was born and raised in NorCal, but currently living in Milwaukee. Okay.
G'day, governor! Sorry.
All right. Looks like Sharks are bolstering their forwards, but he feels another trade. Sharks would be fools to trade Klo.
Agreed.
If I had to lose anyone, it would be Seto. This makes me sad because Seto's a stud, but something has got to give. The D is atrocious. Anything to disagree with that email?
No.
Yeah, I think you pretty much got it on the... I think Seto is definitely the number one trade candidate. Not a lot of money, definitely some potential... And
but tick tock on the clock because the party don't stop, yo, dude.
What just happened?
That's a song.
Okay,
I think.
Is that apropos to anything we were talking
about? I was just saying tick tock on the clock, Seto.
Oh right.
I mean, isn't his value going down daily? So tough, dude. I just wonder, you know, if he really is at this point a centerpiece in a package, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, what about Seto's stats are not great.
No.
And when you're bringing in Kyle Wellwood to compete with you for a roster spot, not good. The most disheartening thing about Seto, it's a minus 15.
That's brutal.
He's a minus 15, dude. Yeah. That's the worst. Unless your name rhymes with Marlowe. Marlowe's the worst.
Yeah, I know.
Minus 11. Right. Minus 19. Oh, hamburgers is minus 11, dude.
Oh, man.
Good.
Hamburgers.
Okay, so Trevor goes even further, and the email is titled, Seto a Dirtbag.
Oh.
Yeah. He was talking about an incident in the Leafs game last Tuesday and witnessed an icing play where Seto and Francois Beauchemin were racing into the end board. Seto then purposefully pushed Beauchemin's skates out from under him, sending him crashing into the boards. Then Beauchemin gets up and challenges him. Seto turns him down. What a dirtbag move, don't you think?
I love the usage of the word dirtbag.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. Very good. Family friendly, yet very descriptive.
Yeah, it makes the point perfectly.
It does. So, dirtbag or no?
We took a look at the tape, dude.
Yeah, we looked at it a few times.
I would say penalty, yes. Dirtbag, no.
No. It wasn't an obvious move to try and push Boschman's skates out. He was clearly trying to lift his stick. You see his stick only contacted his foot for a fraction of a second before he lifted it, trying to take Boschman's stick out so he wouldn't touch the puck first and negate the icing. Didn't work out that way. Was it a reckless play? Probably. Should have resulted in a penalty for Setoguchi. I don't know. Okay, so that aside, should he have stood up to Boschman? I don't even know if Boschman was going to drop at that point. He didn't drop. You think Boschman wanted to fight him right then and there? I don't even know if that's true. But walking away from it or not engaging, what do you think?
I don't know. I can't remember what the score was at that point either.
Right.
They were probably
losing.
I wasn't struck by it as being a pivotal moment in the game. And honestly, if you hadn't written in an email about it, I don't think we'd be talking about it.
I remember the play vaguely. Had to go back to the video to see it. It didn't seem like an egregiously bad play at the time. Should have been a penalty. You see stuff like that where Ryan Clough or somebody goes after somebody all the time, like the hit on Logan Couture that took his knee out.
That's not Seto's MO, you know? Torrey Mitchell, dirtbag for hitting Curtis Foster on the icing play? No.
Unfortunate.
Unfortunate, you know, a heat of the moment, but not a dirtbag. Scott Nickel, dirtbag for elbowing 4 games.
Hey.
Ben Eager, dirtbag for sucker punching Colby Armstrong.
Hey.
We got two guys, one guy fresh on suspension and one guy coming off a suspension. Dude, did you see the tape of Eager punching Colby Armstrong? I haven't seen
it. Is that a while ago?
No, it just happened.
Oh, okay. Then I haven't seen it.
Got suspended.
There must have been some other sucker punch recently that I watched.
And I don't even remember the elbow that Nicole got suspended for.
I remember the hit. It was a high hit. I remember the announcers talking about it, but I didn't spend a lot of time reviewing the play.
So. Nicole has to forfeit $16,000 in salary.
That sucks. Yeah, that's like what I get paid in like a couple of weeks or something.
Couple of weeks?
I'm just kidding.
Dude.
That's like 3 years for me.
Oh, liar.
All right, dude.
Liar.
We got to talk about our contest that we announced last week.
Yes.
Which is the person with the best iTunes review gets a free Dudes on Hockey t-shirt. And unfortunately, Matt, who is from Ottawa, sort of got the short end of the stick here. He says, since I'm in Canada, I use iTunes Canada. Hello, Governor Canada. So my review can
only, hello, Prime Minister.
It can only be seen by those logged into iTunes Canada. Yeah, that's a tough break. He hopes he still qualifies for the shirt. Matt, normally I would say yes, but considering the quality of one of the reviews in particular on iTunes America.
Yeah, there's a pretty outstanding review, dude. Are you primed and ready to read it?
I'm going to read it, and then Matt has another question, which I'm going to get to in a moment. But first, we got to read this. The title is DOH, the Peppermint Schnapps Turned Four Loco of Hockey Podcast. Now, that's just a good start. Let's be honest, my fellow Sharks fans, since the inception of this podcast, hosts Mike and Doug have had quite an easy task in evaluating the team's regular season situation. It went down smooth and left the palate vibrating and pleasingly numb, much like peppermint schnapps. Take a gander over the archives and bathe yourself in sweet nostalgia. Woe be unto us, Sharks faithful, for those days are, at least for now, over. The duo now have the most unpleasant task ahead in rooting out the squad's troubles in the weeks ahead. It's good listening, my fellow fans, but will evoke the basest emotional reactions, shake you to your very core, and leave you with a somewhat fragmented memory. Much like Four Loko, the choice of those looking for a cheap, quick fix, you ask, who are these men that dare pontificate upon their ivory microphones? What doth these Californian scoundrels know of hockey? Quite a bit, I say. Perhaps too much. I fear that the dudes will uncover too much, and I will find their remains 1 month later in Ray Ratto's mustache. Be careful, dudes, and Godspeed. That, yes. That's excellent. That is just excellent.
That is well done.
That is very well done. So that is by Joe. Joe, I hope you'll contact us with the proper contact information so we may send you, and your shirt size, so we may send you a shirt of your very own.
That is a delightful Dudes on Hockey t-shirt.
Well deserved.
Amen, sir.
Yes, and there were other good ones as well, and I'm sure, Matt, that yours was excellent, but I'm afraid Joe has gone above and beyond and deserves a shirt.
Kudos, Governor.
Kudos. So I'd say a successful contest there.
We've got a question, though.
We do have a question for Matt. Excuse me. On a completely different note, I have a question. Why are NCAA rules different for hockey? Guys are drafted and have contact with agents, but are still allowed to play college hockey. Why is that?
Let's ask the rooster.
Where'd the rooster go?
Dude, way to disrupt the room.
Sorry, dude.
What else you got on that?
All right, dude. Well, I went to Yahoo because Yahoo's always correct. No, actually, there is a Yahoo Answers on this. And, of course, I can't check all of this exactly. But
so we're taking someone's word for it.
Yeah, we're taking this guy's word for it. He's a top contributor to Yahoo Answers. I don't know if that means anything.
You mean when he's not writing on that, he's writing babbling posts on our blog?
Yes, it's possible.
Could be.
He says, college hockey players cannot have agents and are not allowed to correspond with agents. Any negotiation with professional clubs has to be handled by a player and or their parents. So prior to accepting a scholarship offer at an NCAA D1 school, a player can talk with an agent about his options, but he is not permitted to hire the agent, nor is he permitted to promise to hire the agent once he graduates or leaves college. And he also references a case in 2007 with Kyle Okposo was actually rendered ineligible because he had too much contact with the Islanders, which ended his college career. So, Matt, I think... it's a little bit off there. It sounds like they can have a little bit of contact before they're drafted, but it seems like they have basically the same rules as NCAA football players in that they're not allowed to retain an agent for professional purposes while they're still in college.
But they can be drafted. Like, Charlie Coyle has been drafted, and he is property of the San Jose Sharks, but he is attending Boston University.
That's right.
But he's not... But in Charlie Coyle's case... No, he did not sign a contract. Is
no,
that correct?
No, he does not have a contract. And, so and his eligibility
just
doesn't...
rights.
That's right.
They so once you sign a contract, you have to leave college. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. And there are some other restrictions. I think that there are certain restrictions about what NCAA players can and can't do, even if their rights are owned by the Sharks. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know if training camp is it, but there's other things, like maybe a rookie tournament or something. I remember Nick Petrecki like not being... either in camp or on some sort of activity that you would think that a rookie or a highly touted prospect would be involved in, and he wasn't because of NCAA eligibility rules. So there certainly are some restrictions there. So interesting question, Matt, and I enjoyed doing the research to find out the answer. Good stuff.
It is that odd exception that you know guys who are playing NCAA sport are already property of a professional team.
Can't that be true with baseball? Don't like 18-year-olds get drafted in baseball too?
But I think if they don't sign, then their rights are renounced.
Oh, okay.
I remember correctly. So wow. If you got drafted your freshman year of college and you didn't sign, I think by the end of that summer, then I think you're back in the draft. I'm just sort of making that up, but just off of general knowledge, dude.
Sounds good, dude.
I think that I'm going to roll with that one.
That sounds
good.
You know,
like football, basketball, even MLS soccer, that's not the case. Now, some of these guys can still be in college, like a player for the San Jose Earthquakes was attending Wake Forest and finished up his classes and was playing in MLS games, which was pretty crazy.
That's weird.
You know, the college hockey is a unique situation for sure.
All right, dude, let's look ahead to the next week. We have Vancouver in Vancouver on Thursday night, and we have Minnesota at home on Sunday before the Sharks go on a monster road trip, starting with the Kings, and then we'll be broken up by the All-Star weekend. So what are you looking for in the next three games or so?
So we've got Vancouver, Minnesota, and then who's on Sunday?
We don't have anybody on Sunday. We have the Kings on the following Wednesday and then the All-Star weekend.
I have an expectation or at least a hope that they're going to play extremely hard in Vancouver. That's I would be beyond thrilled with a win. I want an outstanding effort.
Right.
I think Vancouver probably doesn't think much of the Sharks right now.
Sure.
So this is a good opportunity for us to go in there and surprise them. I think we're going to have two guys, new guys on the team that are going to be looking to make a serious impression.
Kyle Wellwood in Vancouver.
Yeah,
that could be interesting.
As soft as the reputation that this guy has, if he's a professional athlete and if he has any heart and chutzpah at all, he's going to show up in this game.
He's going to want to at least prove something on the scoreboard.
Sure. And the Sharks have responded in the past to games like this. They're going to be playing on a high for two new guys. I'm going on the record right now, dude.
Oh, well.
The Sharks are going to lose in Vancouver.
Nice, dude.
You know what that means.
Yes, they're going to win.
Dude.
Because you're always wrong.
You're right.
I know.
I caught a lot of grief for that this weekend, too, about picking incorrectly. So
a point would be awesome against Vancouver.
I think a point is very possible, dude. Minnesota would be disappointed if we didn't get 2 points in that game.
But Minnesota shut out Vancouver 4-0 only a few nights back. So it's not that Minnesota doesn't have the ability to beat good teams, too. So
and they, if I'm remembering right, you know, this year they've played us pretty tight.
Yeah.
So still, the Minnesota and LA, those are two games that you got to win those games.
Those are like the bubble games. Those aren't, I consider neither of those games to be games that the Sharks should definitely win. You would like to say against Minnesota at home, but given the way the Sharks have been playing lately and the way Minnesota's been playing, I can't say that's just a slam dunk win. And of course, the Kings in LA isn't a slam dunk win. So if we get four or more points out of these next three games, I'll be very pleased.
At this point, I guess, baby steps, you know? And then you've got to look ahead to this huge road trip that's coming up. They're going to Boston. They're going to Washington, Columbus, New Jersey, Florida. These are some pretty tough games, dude.
Except for New Jersey.
And maybe Columbus actually usually gives us all we can handle, dude.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've got a lot to look forward to, maybe more than in past seasons. We're going to be really, really focused on these games in February and March, and hopefully so will the team.
Right, and going back to Leonard's email, I don't agree with the sentiment that everybody's going to be thrilled if they make the playoffs. I think the Sharks still are expected to make the playoffs. It would be somewhat disappointing if they were a very low seed. At this point, I think 4, 5, 6 seems to be what the Sharks would be shooting for. It seems a little far-fetched to think they could go for the division win, but I can't imagine anybody in Sharks land being pleased just merely by the fact that they made the playoffs, especially when we have teams like Philadelphia and stuff making the playoffs after, you know, at least as bad of a season last year. So
but squeaking in, that doesn't mean that that's a bad thing.
Right.
I mean, we've seen, you know, a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, the last game of the season last year, they were playing to get in.
That's right.
You know? And then they got in and they made it all the way to the Cup. We've seen the Anaheim Ducks do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know? Edmonton Oilers.
Right.
Exact same thing. So why can't this happen to the Sharks? There's no reason why it can't happen to the Sharks, dude.
And if the Sharks make it in late and lose in the first round, no one in Sharks land is going to give this team a pass. Not with the talent they have. No one's going to say, oh, well, they had a bad first half and at least they made the playoffs. So what if they lost to Minnesota in the first round? No one's going to say
that. Awkward question.
Yeah.
If this team loses in the first round, major changes?
Yeah.
In the offseason.
I mean, we're not there yet.
More than ever, hurt feelings, tears, man tears.
Absolutely.
Bring back Nabby.
Maybe we can get a...
Nothing on that?
Bring back Nabby. That's a mad tears.
I just slipped that in there.
Maybe we could get a State of the Sharks and witness the man tears.
Go see the fighter, dude. Okay. I know I slipped that in there. That quite possibly could be my favorite movie this year.
Wow.
It is.
The year is a little young, dude.
I'm saying 2010.
Is that a 2010 movie?
It's a 2010. It's a really, really good movie.
I
recommend it highly.
I'm going with Hot Tub Time Machine.
I put together my top five list, and I said it was Black Swan, True Grit, Social Network, The Fighter, and Jackass 3D.
Nice. That's a good choice.
Yeah.
All right, Sharks fans. We appreciate you listening to this podcast. We hope you'll email us some more questions at dudesonhockey.com. And we hope the Sharks are going to continue this turnaround, and we'll be back at you again next week, same time, same place.
Supersize me, Kyle Wellwood.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.